Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We have some big NFL headlines on this Monday morning, plus a sleepless Nick with some fantastic takes that you better strap in and get ready to hear some of these.
Thank you, Jenna Wolf.
Baker and the Browns now control the AFC North. Oh. The Patriots left Buffalo undefeated after just barely beating the Bills. And just how good are the Cowboys after last night's game? Let's dive in and find out. We head to the loudest place on earth, the Superdome. Saints hosting the Cowboys, final seconds of the fourth quarter. Dallas down two. Dak Prescott finds Randall Cobb deep down the middle for 32 yards to move the Cowboys to midfield. Cowboys hurry to the line. Spike the ball with 2 seconds left on the clock. One final chance for Dallas, but Dak's Hail Mary is up, and it is intercepted as the New Orleans Saints go on to win 12-10. Both teams now move to 3-1 on the season. Here is Dak Prescott after the Cowboys' first true test of the season.
We just didn't execute. We just didn't do what we needed to do. We didn't perform in the passing game, in the run game, as well as we have in these past few weeks. And this will be a great learning experience from us. We're going to take a lot from it.
Our defense played their off. They kept us in the game. You know, they gave us a chance. And, I mean, I'll say it again, we just didn't hold up our side of the offensive end. But, you know, we just can't let those guys down like that.
There's no confidence lost with this loss. I can promise you that. There's a lot of things that we'll take from this, that we'll learn from. We'll become a better team because of it. And that's the most important thing.
Listen, we talked all week. This was going to be a good measuring stick for the Dallas Cowboys. How are they going to fare against some real competition? Yesterday, they got it. CeCe, what happened to the Cowboys' offense in that loss to the Saints?
Well, they couldn't generate enough big plays. They couldn't get enough third down conversions because big plays is what they needed. In a low-scoring game like that, you know that the Saints, with Teddy Bridgewater, they're trying to manage what they're doing offensively. Yes, their defense was playing great. But if you're able to make those big chunk yardage, they weren't. Jarwin, the tight end, he makes one catch. I think Cobb there at the end, he makes another catch over 30 yards. Besides that, that was it. I think Dallas had the ball, 9 possessions in the game. That's the part that's not surprising. But their longest drive was 35 yards. And when you can only do that, you can't flip the field. You don't turn the opposition over a number of times. That's what you get when you get into a contest like this. So for me, if I didn't know Drew Brees wasn't playing, and you told me it was the fourth game of the season, Dallas goes to New Orleans Sunday night, and they lose 12-10. Wow, that was a hell of a game. They picked right up from last year's game with the way they played. You just wouldn't think it would be that tough of a defensive matchup. But Dallas, when you don't convert third downs and you don't get those big chunk yards, they were able to contain Zeke. All right? And the passing game, they tried to keep everything in front of them. You got to give credit to the Saints, especially their defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen Jr. He did a tremendous job to a defense that's been criticized for years and years and years. And we didn't know Drew Brees being out 6 weeks, man. Can they go 500? Wow, they've had 2 impressive wins since the week number 2 injury in L.A. to Drew Brees.
You mentioned the lack of chunk plays. The Cowboys only had 2 plays of more than 20 yards, and one of them you saw was in not quite garbage time, but in the first 59 minutes and 45 seconds, they had 1 play that was a significant play down the field, the play to Jarwin. I would also like to first and foremost apologize to the Dallas Cowboys because I gave them advice on Friday. They appeared to take it, and it was terrible advice. I said, run Zeke early and often. They tried that, and it was disastrous. They ran Zeke in the first half. They had 11 first down plays. They ran Zeke on 7 of those first down plays for a total of 15 yards. In the game, he had 18 carries for a total of 35 yards. The Cowboys ran the ball 20 times. No run was longer than 7 yards. Only 4 of those runs generated a first down, and on one of them, they fumbled the ball. So the running game was non-existent, and unfortunately for Dak, when the running game was non-existent in this game, his production was non-existent to go right along with it. Kellen Moore, who had been so good in the first 3 weeks, calling play-action passes where Dak was so successful, they only called 7 play-action passes the entirety of the game. The offense constricted. The Saints' defense was great. And where the concern is for Dallas is in the premise to your question. They, for the first time all year, played a legitimate defense, and the offense evaporated. You don't want to overreact to it, but you also didn't want to overreact how good the offense looked against the Giants, Washington, and Miami, three teams whose everyone's offense has looked good against. You play a Saints team that doesn't have a great defense, but has a better defense than those teams, and they absolutely shut you down.
And we should just take a second to give credit to Teddy Bridgewater, who has stepped in to a very large stage and has managed to, I don't know if you call it excel or game manager, whatever he had to do to allow the Saints to stay in that game. But let's go back to the Cowboys. Is this a larger issue for this team, or was this just one game?
Yeah, I'm going to try not to overreact. I'm going to try to look at it as one game, but there are things to watch going forward. As far as Michael Gallup, he's been injured for a few weeks. He is their speed receiver in this offense, and we saw in week number one where he exploded. Week number two, he with another contribution. Is this offense different when he's out of it? Because last night, no explosive plays, not as much speed in the lineup. I think their defense will continue with the trend that it's on. So for me, first month of the season, you got four games. You got two in your division. You definitely should win. And we know the bye week against Miami. Being at 3-1, the Dallas Cowboys, there weren't a lot of people who were thinking about Dallas as a Super Bowl contender. You can't leave the first month of the season and still not think that the Dallas Cowboys losing in New Orleans on a Sunday night, that is not a, there were some bad losses yesterday. But this is not a bad loss. Now, you might say with Teddy Bridgewater, he has more experience than most of the backups that we have around the league. And Sean Payton and this organization, that's a good football team. All right? Absent of that one call, they should have gone to the Super Bowl. Absent of the miracle, they're in the NFC Championship 2 years ago. They're in Minneapolis. So we can't take away from New Orleans what they've done the last 2 weeks. So, you know, I don't think this is a sign to come for Dallas. If their defense continues to play like that, I believe their big plays will be back in the past. And how many teams are going to be able to hold Zeke under 40 yards rushing next?
And the Cowboys now, in Zeke's career, there's only been 9 games. He hasn't had at least 70 yards rushing. They are 1-8 in those 9 games. The one win was actually week one this year against the Eli Manning-led Giants when we knew Zeke was going to be on something of a pitch count. The major concern for Dallas, though, to me, happened at the very end of the game, and it's something to watch, especially with Green Bay and those pass rushers coming next week, which is, if people didn't stay up late to watch, New Orleans nursing a 2-point lead. They're in field goal range. Teddy Bridgewater takes a brutal sack to take him out of field goal range. So all of a sudden, Dallas is going to get the ball back, not needing to drive the length of the field, just needing to get in field goal range. On the very first play of that drive, Dak takes a sack. On the sack, Tyron Smith gets rolled up on. It was reported this morning. They think that's a high ankle sprain. We have seen this offense in years past grind to a halt if Tyron Smith is not out there or if he's at less than 100%. If it is a high ankle sprain, he's going to be compromised at best next week. That could be more impactful than just the loss. And yeah, you don't want to overreact to it, but two teams in the NFC felt great after 3 weeks, Green Bay and Dallas. Both those teams, you don't want to overreact to their week four losses.
Right.
One of them is going to take a week five loss, and then all of a sudden 3-1 is going to turn in, or 3-0 is going to turn into 3-2, and then there will be a little bit of panic setting in either in Green Bay or in Dallas.
And that's because Dallas hosts the Green Bay Packers come Sunday, so yes, someone's going to have to give. Hey guys, this is Jenna Wolf. I'm here to tell you about Noom. Some people think that all diet and weight loss plans are the same, but that's because they haven't tried Noom. Noom is a new, totally different approach to losing weight and getting healthy that uses psychology and small goals to help you change your habits, making it easy to lose the weight and keep it off for good. Noom combines the power of technology with real human support, offering as little or as much help as you want along the way. And since Noom is an app, it's always with you and easy to use, which makes it super easy to stay on track and reach your goals. It's just as simple to get started. Go online, answer a few quick questions, and they'll create a personalized program just for you. Noom can help you lose your old way of thinking about food and dieting. So what do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/podcast, Noom.com/podcast, and start your 14-day trial today. Change your habits, change your mind, change for good with Noom. The Browns were supposed to be tested against this tough Baltimore team, but Nick Chubb did not get that memo. The second-year running back went off 165 yards on 20 carries. Math in my head tells me that's about 8 yards per carry.
Good
Chubb
math,
added
Jenna.
A career-high 3 touchdowns. Browns beat the Ravens 40-25. Both teams now move to 2-2 on the year. Here's Baker Mayfield on all those Browns critics.
The win's great, but I hope everybody keeps the same energy. Threw us in the trash. We won't forget it.
Of course, because that was the takeaway from the game, the critics and what everyone's writing about. Kenny, what do you think the key was for this Browns win?
Well, it's the Browns' commitment to the run game. I mean, Freddie Kitchens recognizes that the deficiency on the offensive side of the ball is that offensive line. So this might come as a newsflash to football fans, but guess what? Offensive lines are a lot better going forward than they are going backward. When you look at the advantages that the offense has, they know the snap count and they know where they're going. And so when you're running the football, you're forcing the defense to be reactive to you. You're the ones that are the aggressors. And yesterday you saw that with the Cleveland Browns offense. They were very aggressive in that game. The first drive, they ended up having a 3-and-out. But then that second drive, it's a 13-play, 84-yard drive, and they took up 8.5 minutes on the clock. They won time of possession 18 minutes to 12 minutes in the first half against the Baltimore Ravens. And that's when you started to see the opportunities for the chunk plays come in the second half. In yesterday's game, that Browns offense had 10 plays of 16 yards or more. So you're talking about one of the best defenses in the NFL year in and year out, and that Browns offense was able to find a way to work around having a shaky offensive line and have explosive plays. But I think it starts with their commitment to being able to run the football.
I gave him advice on Friday. I didn't think he would listen because Baker's always saying the media's throwing him in the trash. We haven't thrown him in the trash, but I did tell him if they watch some football on Thursday night, do what Philadelphia did as far as going on the road, because I got a lot of respect for Lambeau Field. There's no place where I've lost more than in Lambeau Field. So there's a certain mentality that it takes to be able to win a game. Canty, you've played there in Baltimore. You know what type of defense they play in attitude. So the attitude that Cleveland had from losing last week and what transpired in this game to me was the most impressive thing. Yes, there were some X's and O's, but from the time they entered that stadium, Freddie Kitchens, which I thought was not the best thing, won the toss. They decide they're going to take the ball. Now, they didn't get points in that first drive, but it sends a message to my team, Canty. This is the type of mentality we're taking here in Baltimore, and this is what it's going to be able to take to win. They went back to what he did last year when he was named the coach. We're going to go 2 tight ends. We're going to go formation where we can run the ball, and we're going to give our offensive line an opportunity. And that's why last year this offensive line finished, surprisingly, as a Pro Football Focus top 10 ranked offensive line. And we thought there were still question marks coming into this season, but yesterday was their bright moment of the season. They dominated the line of scrimmage, Nick.
It's a fork in the road moment for the team. You're playing the 2-1 Ravens, who have looked excellent all year. You've looked bad even in your win. With a loss, you go 2 games back in your division with them having the tiebreaker, and people are really throwing you in the trash. And the response was Freddie Kitchens went back to his roots, if you will. The offensive line played its best game of the year. Those two are undoubtedly correlated. Baker Mayfield, in the biggest spot of his very young career, had the best game he's had all season. And I want to talk about Baker for a second, because I understand his personality is going to continue to rub some people the wrong way. And even after a win, continuing to lash out at the haters.
I think that we have such a stereotype. We have such a cookie cutter for our quarterbacks that anyone that's any different than mainstream, they're going to have a hard time as far as being accepted as an NFL starting quarterback.
And for Baker, you are not a 6 foot tall walk-on quarterback that then becomes a Heisman Trophy winning number one overall pick if you don't have a bit of bleep you factor, and where you are creating either fake doubters or real doubters and lashing out at them. There is an element of Allen Iverson to Baker Mayfield, which is part of what got you there is what is going to turn some people off to you forever. And it's why I think if we're going to watch the Browns, whether you like it or not, and I'm not begrudging anyone for not liking it, you've got to get used to it. because it's not inauthentic. It's not fake. It is, this is who he is, and I would argue it is part of the reason he's been so successful, because there's a lot of reasons Baker Mayfield shouldn't be where he is. His mentality is one of the biggest reasons he is where he is.
I don't have an issue with Baker Mayfield's mentality. What I do have an issue with is when he addresses the media, some of the things that he comments on, it seems like he's focusing on the outside noise that they spend a lot of time saying, you know what, that's not a distraction in terms of us handling our business. My thing with the quarterback is, he's responsible for setting the agenda for the team. The quarterback is an extension of ownership in the front office. So that's a big responsibility on those shoulders for Baker Mayfield. And he's got to understand the platform that he has, not just with the media and the fans, but with his guys in the locker room. Because when he's talking to the media, he's also sending a message to the guys in the locker room. So that's the biggest thing for me with the Browns, because this has been a team through the first 3 weeks of the season that hasn't executed at a real high level.
But we're not, but agreed. But that, listen, he's, that is, you can say that that's the wrong message to be sending to the locker room, but it's going to be the consistent message. He is going to be different than these other quarterbacks. You said that, Chris, when he was drafted. And you through 3 weeks, they weren't consistent. Through their fourth week, in their biggest game of the year, they played great in a way that all of a sudden, after an awful month, they're in first place in their division.
Here's the thing, Nick. I don't need my quarterback to be somebody that's the one that's making the waves. I need my quarterback to be a stabilizing force in my locker room. And I don't need my team to be up and down. That's the thing that concerns me with Baker Mayfield. But listen, yesterday, the team went out there and executed. We talked about the Cleveland Browns last week being the most penalized team in the league, averaging 15 called penalties a game. Yesterday, only 6 penalties for 41 yards. So a part of being able to win games in the NFL is making sure that you don't do the things that cost you games. And so the offense did that. They handled their business. Got to give some love to Steve Wilks in that defense. They kept them in the game. I mean, forcing Lamar Jackson to hold the ball a lot longer than he wanted to. Some coverage sacks. The 4 turnovers in the second half, including the turnover on downs. And to me, the big one, the Mark Ingram fumble, which turned the tide and ended up giving them a double-digit lead. But to me, this Cleveland Browns team, they put it together all 3 phases for the first time this season in yesterday's game.
Yeah, I think that Baker, like most people, because Baker's really smart. I think that as you stay in this business longer, I've been covering this league a long time, and I think I'm better today than I ever have been covering it. And it's not because I said I wasn't going to change. It was because I was committed to changing. And most of my personality is exactly the same. But as you get more information, you get an opportunity to change. I expect Baker Mayfield to change because regardless of what we expect from our quarterback, all of them have the same assignments as far as you have to be the spokesperson for the team. You have to do certain things. Now, we don't care how you go about doing it based on the different personalities, but realize there's another agenda, and you can't fight the media 16 weeks. It's not a battle you will ever win. So when you come into the locker room, when you come into the media afterwards, you need to start talking about, what about that offensive line? Because they weren't blocking media members this week. They were blocking the Ravens, and they did a hell of a job.
Yep.
And sometime I need my quarterback to tell people about my offensive line, because no one else is going to be talking about them. So as he gets older, I can guarantee you, when he was at Texas Tech, he was a little bit different. Once he went to Oklahoma, after he won the Heisman Trophy, he was a little bit different. And I'm not knocking what he did. I'm just saying, as a leader, we need you to be on your messaging point every time you come to that podium, and you can't chase ghosts as far as the media. It's exhausting, and you just can't keep making stuff up. That offensive line did a great job, and that should have been one of his talking points as far as, man, what a tremendous job the offensive line gave to, so I can do my job.
I like that he's brash, and I like that he's got a personality, and I like that he's going to lead in his own way. My issue was, if you're going to be angry after a loss, fine. Don't be angry after a win. Don't come out after a win and be like, well, see, we won.
And
so,
I guess my point is, and I'll leave it at this, is when Canny says, I want my quarterback to be this way, and you're saying, don't be this way, then you're not going to want your quarterback to be Baker, and you're not going to like him after a win, because maybe he will evolve after years. But this is, for the time being, the only way he knows how to be, and the idea that he's going to – it's the only way he's ever been. It's the only way he's ever been.
You don't say someone's done something. We talked about this with Vontaze Burfict. It's the only way he ever was. So, well, this is him.
Did he
change?
This
is who he is. He hasn't changed.
But he's one of 1,600. The other 1,600 have changed.
Yeah, I understand. But
he's not in a good place right now.
When Baker Mayfield is taunting the University of Kansas, and when he's the Heisman Trophy winner, and they're the worst team in Division I, that is who he's always been. Maybe one day he will have an epiphany. That day ain't coming week 5 against the Niners, win or lose.
But just because he's that way doesn't mean it's okay.
I guarantee when Baker gets older, he's going to look back and be like, yeah, you know something?
Was
that
kind
wasn't
of
necessary.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
It's Patriots at Bills, 2-3-0 team, second quarter. What's Tom Brady doing there? Throwing a ball that was picked off by Micah Hyde. Tough day for Brady, though. Finished with 150 yards, no touchdowns. Fourth quarter, Josh Allen was scrambling, takes a big hit. He'd leave the game, wouldn't come back. Concussion protocol. Bills have one last chance, down 6, but Allen's replacement, Matt Barkley, was a good effort, wasn't good enough. Pats barely escaped Buffalo with a win. They'll take it, though. 16-10, your final. New England remains undefeated. Here's quarterback Tom Brady on his lackluster performance.
We just didn't do a very good job, I would say, of consistently doing the right thing against a really good defense that certainly plays well at home. But it's good to win, and whether we win 45-40 or 45-3 or whatever it was, say 16-10, they all count the same. We're just going to have to figure out how to do a better job on offense. Defense is, I know they're going to play great. They've been playing great all season long, and try to score more points than we did today.
All right, Chris Canty, were you more impressed by the Pats' resiliency, or were you more concerned about what you saw from Tom Brady in that offense?
I was more impressed that the Pats found a way to win. I know people are concerned about their offense and the lack of weapons that Tom Brady has to work with, especially not having Antonio Brown. But listen, the Bills defensively have made it tough on everybody's offense. I mean, that team was second in total defense last year under Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott, in the last 7 seasons, has had 5 defenses that finished in the top 10 in total yards, going back to when he was a defensive coordinator down with the Carolina Panthers. So they're going to play good defense up in Buffalo. That's the culture that Sean McDermott has built around that team. So it doesn't surprise me to see that Patriots team go up there and struggle. I don't think Tom Brady threw a touchdown pass the last time he played up in Buffalo in 2018. So I look at this situation, I say good teams find a way to win those type of games. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how good this Pats defense can be. Their secondary, I mean, it's probably the best in the National Football League. Didn't realize this until I was watching the game yesterday. Devin McCourty is his 4th straight game with having an interception. So, I mean, the fact that you have guys that can make plays, that can turn the ball over, that's always going to give your offense a chance. And when you create those sudden change, short field situations, give Tom Brady enough of those opportunities, he's going to be able to capitalize on them. So I'm more concerned about the New England Patriots being able to continue to sustain this level of play, because typically we see them start off the season a little bit slow. They haven't done that this year. They started off really, really fast, and the fact that they're playing at such a high level so early in the season, I'm wondering if they can sustain that throughout the regular season into the playoffs.
So we've got 2-4-0 teams that both went on the road yesterday against previously undefeated teams and escaped with victories. The reason that I think Chiefs fans should feel good and Patriot fans a little concerned is where the Chiefs struggled is where you know they're going to be strong, their offense. Where the Chiefs struggled is turning the ball over, not moving the ball, missing open passes. Where the Patriots struggled, if the Patriots had won this game 35-28, you know, on a late touchdown, I would say be encouraged. That's resiliency. But I was concerned about their offense going into the game. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady were concerned about their offense going into the game. That's why they were so upset that they had to cut Antonio Brown. They have injuries all over the offensive line. Their only proven receiver is Julian Edelman, yet to really pop this year, and partially probably the last couple weeks because of that chest injury. Josh Gordon, after a good week 1, has been not the Josh Gordon we saw last year prior to the suspension with the Patriots.
For someone of his talent level, very inconsistent.
And now he got dinged as well. He had a wrist injury that he suffered, I think, in week 2. But the Patriots offense, this was their first test of the season, and they failed it. Their offense, their team did not. The team, the special teams, 3 phases of the game. A-plus special teams, A-triple-plus defense. That can offset your F from the offense. But there's a reason Tom Brady celebrated the way he did on that pump block in the first quarter, early second quarter or late first quarter.
Yeah.
He knew the game's over. It's like this Bills team, as long as I don't throw a pick six, the Bills are not going to be able to manufacture enough points. And so the Pats offense, when they do later in the year face Baltimore, when they do later in the year face the tougher defenses they have, how much punch will they have? Because Sony Michel has been bad all year long. The offensive line's been injured all year long. And Tom Brady is clearly not going to stand in the pocket and take hits until January. In January, I believe he'll do it because that's when it matters for him. But right now, it is chucking and ducking at the first sign of a pass rush. That I think will continue any other time they play a team with a real pass rush.
Okay, now I'm actually more concerned after hearing all that than I was when I watched the actual game. I wouldn't give special teams an A-plus because they do have some semblance of an issue with their kicking game.
Sure.
Yeah. Which is not an issue now.
That's a really good point.
Because, and it could come back to bite them, but it is clouded by the fact that they cannot generate any kind of offensive game. CeCe, how concerned are you?
Well, I'm concerned about because of a few things that I've seen. Not only Tom Brady, the way he looks when pressure gets close to him, like, no, is he not trying to be contacted at any point? But the last couple weeks, both Wednesdays, the last 2 weeks, he's been out of practice.
Yep.
Thursday, he was limited. Last week, they signed Cody Kessler as a backup to have a third arm in the building. That's not something typically New England does. When you look at all the injuries they have, if they could have an extra spot, it would be to have an extra lineman. With they missed their center, they missed their left tackle, and other positions are injured on that offensive line, they would sign another offensive lineman to have him aboard so they can get him up to speed as far as pass protections. When they bring in the extra arm, they are taking reps away from Tom Brady. They're watching film today like they lost. It's like a funeral in the building. Belichick is pointing out the negative plays, Brady and the rest of the team. You should be worried about their lack of explosive plays with the wide receivers because to make explosive plays down the field, you got to hold the ball as a quarterback. Tom Brady knows this is just like the first half of his career. New England's got a great defense, and he's not going to make mistakes to be able to take wins away because they will be good enough special teams-wise, and they'll be good enough defensively to be able to get to what I believe to be 14-2 during the regular season, Chris.
No, you're absolutely right, and this team is going to continue to improve. That's what they've always done under Bill Belichick. Now, it's hard to envision their defense improving because their defense is already playing at a really high
against
level.
Against the rush. Now with Hightower being hurt, too,
mm-hmm. Exactly. Because that's one of the things that you have to worry
about. I mean,
Frank
Gore ran like Miami Hurricanes Frank Gore yesterday against them.
Shout out to Frank Gore, fourth player in NFL history, 15,000 career rushing yards, might pass Barry Sanders for the end of the year. There's a month of football where the Patriots play Cleveland, Baltimore, Philly, and Dallas in succession with a bye week in the middle. Four teams with legitimate pass rushes. I want to see how the offense looks in that month of football because they had 3 weeks off to start the year. They're about to have 3 weeks off again with Washington, the Giants, and the Jets. So we won't get to see them challenge until the midpoint of the season. I want to see how the offense looks in that setting.
No, you're right. I think that's a fair concern. But the one thing I will say is this. Had Le'Veon Bell on my radio show a couple of weeks ago as they were getting ready for the New England Patriots for that week three matchup. And one of the things that he said that stood out to me is he said, the Patriots force you to execute on every single play in every phase of the game. And so for me, when you know Bill Belichick is going to have a fundamentally sound team that's well coached, they are going to take advantage of all of the miscues that the opposing teams make. And if they can limit the mistakes that they make, they're always going to put themselves in a situation to make it a fourth quarter game. And if it's a fourth quarter game, what quarterback would you want over Tom Brady?
Did he mention if they're going to win another game or not? Or he probably did. We'll talk about
that. Week 8 against Miami.
Chiefs, and the 49ers are the only undefeated teams left, and the Niners haven't played their Week 4 matchup yet.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
We're joined now by WWE champ and friend of the show, Kofi Kingston.
Yes, hello, sir.
How are you?
Fantastically well. How are you?
Oh, we are great. Oh, yeah. Look at the size, weight, girth, and bling of that thing.
You brought the hardware.
I had to, you know? Yeah.
Does that travel with you wherever you go?
Everywhere. I was just making a joke about it.
You're on the plane.
Subway,
of
you know, my carry-on. We were joking that this is like the biggest first world problem ever to have like a heavy, my bag so heavy because I have to carry this in my bag, in my carry-on. But, you know, it's a good problem to have.
All right, Kofi, tell me what it means to you and the WWE superstar roster to have SmackDown be moving to Fox. It's a new chapter.
Yeah.
You guys are ready to go. How exciting is that for
everyone? It's so exciting. It's awesome. I feel like WWE and Fox, like, we mess. We go very well together, hand in hand. We're all really excited about it. SmackDown's going to be the biggest that it's ever been, and to be at the forefront of all of that, it's awesome for all of us.
So after the debut Friday Night SmackDown, then on October 11th, there's a draft.
Yeah.
And this is something I'm super excited for. Take us behind the scenes about the WWE draft that's going to be going on, what people can expect.
Yeah. So the funny thing is that, like, us as superstars, we don't know where we're actually going. Like, they never tell us where we're going. Oftentimes, I don't know if they even know. But it's like a real draft between, like, Raw and SmackDown, you know? I know, like I said, I'm excited. I got my fingers crossed because SmackDown is, like, new and fresh and on Fox. So I'm hoping to be there. But honestly, being on Raw, too, like, it'll be all good either way. But it's something that we always look forward to. You know, it's a real competition between us and the people on Raw. We actually try to have, like, a competition to have, like, the best show possible. And that makes both of the shows so well. You know, it makes them so good.
As the current WWE champ, you face a guy I'm very familiar with, Brock Lesnar, Minnesota. That was my team. He tried out for the Vikings. And also, you guys faced each other in 2015. He got the best of you.
Bringing up bad stuff.
I want to talk about old stuff. Look, I've grown, man.
With SmackDown and this being the 20th anniversary with all the hype, let's get to the fundamentals of it. What do you have to do to be able to come away with the win?
You know what? It's a thing where so my whole like motif has always been to push yourself. To get this WWE title, it took me 11 years to get to this point. And one of my favorite quotes is, at the top of a mountain is the bottom of another mountain. So Brock Lesnar is the next mountain to climb. You know, I really feel like you should always challenge yourself no matter how high you get. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're never at the top. You're never, you know, you always want to be the best. So beating somebody like Brock Lesnar for me would solidify this championship reign as something incredible, you know, and it's been magical so far.
Here's what I love about the WWE, and I don't know nearly as much as these two do, but fans love who they love for whatever reason they want, and they latch on and they follow them through. This Kofi mania, tell me, why do you think fans have taken such a liking to you and this persona and everything and whoever you are when you're out there?
Yeah, it's been, like I was saying, it took me legitimately 11 years to even get a shot at the WWE Championship. And it kind of happened, like, out of fate. Someone got hurt. I got put into their position, you know, and eventually, like, the fans just started building this momentum. And, like, I'm getting goosebumps even thinking about
that's
it because,
awesome.
Like, that's what we as performers, like, strive for. Obviously, what we do is entertainment, but we strive to have people forget about all of that. You get lost in the storyline and the storytelling, and my story has been an 11-year struggle where anybody who's ever struggled can identify with, and that's what happened. Everyone just built that momentum to WrestleMania, and like you said, it's not cool when I say Kofi Mania,
right?
But you know, they renamed WrestleMania Kofi Mania, and it was just an amazing experience.
You got hurt, and it gave you your big chance. Kind of reminds you of how the quarterback of your favorite team. You're from Boston,
that's right.
Or from Tom Brady got his chance.
He
Patriots,
did.
You got him this year or no?
Yeah, I got him every year.
I mean, Kofi.
No,
he's scared.
I was wondering like why you would even ask that.
That's a bad question.
Okay,
that's what I mean. Okay. I mean, is it a rhetorical? I thought it was a trick question.
Jenna and her household, they feel the same way.
That's my Super Bowl pick.
Oh yeah, of course.
So you're not worried at all?
Never. I'm never worried with Tom Brady behind the helm. Not really. Even last year, you know, in the playoffs against the Chiefs, everybody thought, you know.
I'm just saying, you know.
Last year, everybody was worried. I'm like, no, we got touchdown Tom Brady at the captain. Offside, he's the captain of the ship, you know. So, come on, man.
Kofi, we're so excited. Yeah. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll be watching Friday night on Fox. Much appreciated, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much.
Don't leave that here. Yes.
Oh, he ain't gonna
you
leave
get a
that.
Hand on it too. You know
I don't
what I'm
think,
saying?
Can like, he lift
feel,
that?
Yeah, feel the weight.
It's got
feel the
right.
girth.
It's don't dislocate.
Feel the girth.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.